study from the Centers for Disease Control finds that over 100 million children are being exposed to harmful levels of stupidity in their own homes. Hear the debate about secondhand ignorance on the next In the Know.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
I'm Gregory Dawson, sitting in for Clifford Baines, who is being fitted for a sarcophagus. Recession, which has left thousands of American homeowners destitute for the first time, may be giving rise to a new form of bigotry. Are traditionally poor Americans being unfairly prejudiced against the nouveau poor?
Yes, and it's wrong. Men and women who've just become impoverished are encountering terrible animosity from the poor who've been sleeping in vacant lots their entire lives.
They can't help the fact that they weren't born poor.
Yes, poverty
it's
should
disgusting.
Not be a club with locked doors.
But it's hard not to sympathize with the old poor. Now, if your family has a tradition of going to a particular KFC dumpster for a night out on the town, and you get there and there's a bunch of nouveau lowlifes throwing their chicken bones on the ground, how do you react?
Any vagrant with just a modicum of self-respect knows that that's just going to bring rats to the dumpster.
Oh, I'm
that's
sorry,
exactly
that just
it.
Reeks of classism.
No, I'm sorry, but
what makes America so special is that no matter how many advantages you were born with, you too might wind up sleeping underneath a highway overpass eating nothing but mustard and relish packets.
You know what, being poor is more than just not having money. It's about having the right kind of attitude.
It's a lifestyle.
Frankly, some people just don't have it.
It is true that over the years, a small number of prominent families have worked very, very hard to control who is allowed into the poor man's club.
Yes, like the Jenkins of Lower Delaware, who have been in the panhandling business for more than 300 years. They've had a member of their family in prison every year since David Jenkins first came over with the Dutch in 1630.
It's a legacy. Yeah. But the nouveau poor have no interest in learning the way that things are done.
Now, that is just a stereotype.
No, they just want to sit on the bus stop bench and cry and shiver rather than just fading into the landscape like the more experienced poor know
that
to do.
That doesn't justify discrimination. My brother lost his house last year, and since then, he and his whole family have endured horrible prejudice from other members of the lower crust.
Please, we have to hear this again.
And you told me that all the other poor kids laugh at him because he got his clothes at the Dollar General instead of picked out of the garbage can like the other kids.
I'm sorry.
They won't let him play poke the rat with
them. Buying clothes?
Yes, exactly.
It sounds like your brother isn't even really poor.
Oh, what? Just because my brother lives in a minivan and doesn't sleep in the bushes? Now that is snobbery.
Sounds like mansion trash.
Okay. Excuse me?
She's making a point.
Keep it down.
Sorry, David.
You know I'm down here. Please, keep it down.
Apologies.
What's going wrong, Dad?
Oh, no, never mind, Sam. There's people just making a lot of noise. Let's go back to sleep.
Sorry.
Here, let's get these cans out of here.
But my point is that you can't separate the two classes.
Hey. There's something awfully screwy going on around here.
We'll be right back.
Michael Bauer in for Clifford Baines, who's hiding under this desk and too shy to come out. The distribution of wealth is a serious issue in America today, and of particular concern is the growing gap between rich and super rich. Should the government be doing more to help?
The rich truly have become the disenfranchised segment of our society.
That's true. The average investment banker is only able to afford one boat, but the super rich family will have upwards of 5, 6, 7 boats. Mm. You have to have a decent yacht.
We should have all kinds of programs to help these rich
people. If the rich were just a little bit more motivated, they wouldn't be such a drain on society.
I take issue with that because I grew up rich. I come from a rich background. It's in my new book, Rich Like Me, The Duncan Burch Story, which is available now. It tells me my own experiences. Pool did not have a waterfall in
You didn't have a grotto?
No grotto in them. These were the things I grew
You'd
up
never
with.
Know it.
I, for one, am proud of you.
Even though you're not looking for pity, I pity you.
Okay, well, I'll take
it. But everybody can't vacation in Italy. Some of you have to vacation on Martha's Vineyard, and that's the way the world is. The rich are just unwise with their money. They need to learn more about offshore banking.
I became a wiser man because I come from a rich background.
You're anecdotal, Duncan.
Don't reduce me.
I think we should give more tax breaks to the rich.
That's a good point.
Despite the myth of the American dream, very few rich people ever make it out of the gated community. Do you think it's the oppressive nature of being behind the gated walls?
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about a place where you live that is surrounded by a high security gate. You're trapped inside of that
place.
Can
you describe?
We had to share tennis courts with other families.
The super rich have really no idea what the rich put up with.
And I think that's one of the biggest problems.
The rich are just plain lazy.
Oh, come on.
And they're unmotivated.
It is a proven fact that the majority of the super rich were born into their super richness.
Heredity or environment?
You don't just stay super rich on pure inertia, my friend.
I think it's a lot easier to remain super rich or maintain a level of super richosity.
They only have a few million dollars.
They don't stay in school to get their MBAs and to see it through and get their doctorates.
You're just speaking in generalities, and you're frankly sounding condescending and just ignorant.
Yes,
I'm sorry. It just sounds
what
ignorant.
Proof? What statistics?
I hate to get into statistics about brain size, but if you want me to, I will.
Okay. I guarantee you, the day that you lose your hovercraft, you're going to be whistling a different tune.
It's just so ridiculous!
Listen, continuing on with our week of medical miracles, today we're joined by a man who was told by doctors he only had a few months to live. But he was given a second chance at life last month thanks to a heart transplant from a dead man. Welcome, Dave.
So, Dave, start us off by telling us what your condition was that made it so critical that you take the heart from a dead man.
Well, I contracted cardiomyopathy. The only hope for people that have that is for a transplant.
Well, fortunately for you, you got that transplant after Greg Halton, a father of six, was tragically struck down in a car accident.
Luckily, Greg didn't die in that accident right away.
Right.
He hung on to that slender reed of life long enough that he could make it to the hospital and they could cut that heart out of his chest and you could have it. Did you know Greg, by the way, in life?
No, I didn't.
Well, that's too bad because by all accounts, he was one of the most remarkable human beings that ever lived.
Greg was very active in raising money for children with MS. Do you do any charity work?
Well, I give my daughter canned goods for her school's annual food drive.
Mm-hmm. Well, has it changed you in any way? I mean, within your body beats the heart of this magnanimous, wonderful human being.
To be honest, I don't think of it as Greg's heart.
Well, I guess to you it could be just any dead guy's heart. Just what's important is that you get to get up out of bed and go on with your life.
No, it's not that. I mean, I'm very grateful for the donation. I would have liked to have thanked him, but...
Yeah.
Sure. Well, you may not be able to thank Greg in person, but you can thank those close to him because joining us via satellite is Megan Halton, the dead man's widow. Megan, are you there?
Yes. Hello.
Those are the eyes of the woman who loved the heart that beats in your chest right now. This must be almost a magical moment for the two of you. Do you have anything to say to this grieving widow after you've taken her dead husband's heart and had it installed in your own chest?
Thank you. I'm very, very grateful.
You're leaving something out there, Dave.
For the heart.
Yeah, for the heart. For your dead husband's heart.
I'm just happy that Greg's heart has brought somebody else life.
That is so generous and so wonderful. So obviously, this family was blessed with two incredibly giving, wonderful hearts. Watch out, Megan. There are people like Dave here who may be after your heart.
Well, that's all the time for our medical miracles segment.
But don't go away because we're going to be throwing knives at child magicians.
You don't want to miss that. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, me neither. Okay, stay tuned.
Sit down. Pull up a memory or two. You left before I could talk to you. Ed, is it just my imagination, or is the whole world crazy?
No, it's just a small percentage of the population, Frank.
I hope you're right. It's just that I don't know if I fit anymore.
Yeah. James Russo. You know, the one at 103rd and Broadway. Because this Orthodox girl fell in love with the guy at the falafel shop. And why not? Should she have averted her eyes and just stared at the laminated poster of the Dome of the Rock?
Remembrances of holy days in Tarrytown and Rye. I don't wanna live like this, but I don't wanna die.
Juliana McCaddis filling in for Clifford Baines, who is playing Trivial Pursuit with his neighbor Gene. A recent report from the Shuttleworth Institute shows for the first time that more than half of college-age males say they regularly get stoked. Are young people ignoring the dangers of being stoked?
Yes, kids as young as 17 or 18 are getting stoked over things as simple as snowboarding or finding $10 in their pants pocket.
I think that's horrifying.
It's dangerous and annoying.
Like, I really think this is all being blown out of proportion. I mean, so what if a young man buys a pair of sunglasses, gets a little stoked, and then gives out a bunch of high fives? What is the harm in that?
Duncan, have you ever seen anyone who's stoked?
Yes, I have.
They're like, dude, try these nachos.
Oh, it's just irresponsible. Oh,
yeah,
so
one minute you're getting all stoked up about a weird-looking tree, and then the next minute you're chest bumping with some dude where both of you break your sternums and you're on your way to the emergency room.
No, but I mean, getting stoked is as big a part of growing up as living large or getting weirded out.
But there was an incident at the University of Michigan last year where a college sophomore became so stoked after finding his favorite sweatshirt behind a chair at his friend's house that he remained stoked for 52 hours.
That was a frightening story. I mean, apparently he was just telling everyone he was so stoked about finding it and saying, yes.
But the situation was he thought he had lost it. I mean, you would be just as stoked if that happened to you.
I would absolutely not be that. Don't give me that.
Former BMX biker Ty Lindgren just wrote a confessional novel about being stoked during much of his career. He wrote, "Every day was just one big trip. I was just so stoked to be on the professional BMX circuit."
And now he's dead.
He is?
Oh, my God.
Well, I assume he is.
Duncan, I know personally that the effects of getting stoked can last a lifetime. When I was young and I had a great, great day at the beach and I got really stoked, and that evening, I got this.
Oh!
It's a sweet sun.
Guys, come on. There are very normal people who get stoked from time to time, and their lives are fine.
People just don't want to be told everything is so tight over and over and
Nancy,
over.
Nancy, don't hate, man.
I'm just telling you how it is, fool.
Okay, all right. How about this? I'm stoked right now.
Oh, now?
I feel great. I'm stoked.
Duncan, you're stoked?
Yeah. Stoked. And you know what? I'm getting more stoked because I'm on TV. Right? Yeah, man.
My God.
Yeah. This is rules. Man, you're awesome.
Somebody call 911.
I've never been so afraid in my life.
Oh, God.
Boom!
This is ridiculous.
Boom.
This is awful.
Where are my fucking homies at?
God!
Put me out, Shorty!
Great heavens! What kind of radio show is this?
It's like the best show ever.
Dolores, good for the needy,
tongue and let you hold on to it for me, cause without my skull to amplify my sounds, it might get boring. Width of the staircase with atomic clock precision, and the phases of the moon directing all of my decisions like this. I play dumb like Columbo and get my feelings hurt and move to New York like I'm Dumbo. Don't you want to lose the part of the brain that has opinions, to not even know what you are doing or care about yourself or your species in the billions.
The Marine Fisheries Commission members, excuse me, don't agree. The new restrictions would come in the form of a law.
Look at that cat. Look at that cat. It's like Jabba the Hutt.
And it's time for the annual World's Ugliest Dog Competition. Oh, my word. What happened to that?
The winner gets $1,500. Organizers say it's not about making fun of the ugly dog, but it's a way to showcase pets that don't meet the traditional standards of beauty. I'm not laughing at the pets. I'm laughing at Bob's reaction.
It's okay.
I'm sorry. I just caught
Let's
something.
Go on to the
I
next story.
Can't stop laughing.
Is she
small? I don't know what to do.
Are you okay?
I just stopped laughing and I couldn't stop.
Oh, that's the Woody Woodpecker's song. Yeah, he's a-peckin' it all day long. He pecks a few holes in a tree to see if a redwood's really red. And it's nothing to him on the tiniest whim to peck a few holes in your head. Oh, that's the Woody Woodpeckers too. Makes the other woodpeckers hoon. Though it doesn't make sense to the doll and the dance and the lady woodpeckers long for. That's the Woody Woodpecker song.
The yoga master positions the horse in the various.
It is strange. It is strange video, isn't it?
Actually doing a handstand on the horse at one point.
At one point.
Whether or not this is good for the horse is unclear. If I see the rancher down the street doing this to the horses, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt that it's yoga.
Chris P. Bacon was born without the use of his... My king. Yeah, you have to read this story. We cannot. Oh my God.
A man in West Virginia faces assault charges after police say he passed gas in fantasy.
the officer. I mean, don't laugh. After the man was already arrested for DUI, according to police reports of St. Cruz, I can't even get through this.
He passed the gas so loudly, the officer said it was, quote, very odorous and created contact of an insulting or provoking nature.
They're not usually known for their love of swimming, but one feline in Northern Virginia is hitting the water instead of the gym in an effort to lose weight. Holly is a 13-year-old cat who dislikes the outdoors and other physical activities, but with encouragement from her owner and weekly visits to the Old Town Pet Resort, Holly has managed to lose 1 pound in 6 weeks. Stay with us, everybody. We've got a lot more to come. Oh, yeah, I can't do it. I can't. I guess I'm gonna get in trouble.
Wait.
I can't do it. The lash is gonna come off.
Look out, we got a lash. We got a lash off. Let me tell you about this, Chanel.
Snorting. Poll count 10 out of 10. Mulberry weeds and grass are in the air. Poll count is 6 out of 10. Air quality is good for the million. We'll see 73 for your high today. Here's Rob Johnson.
Funny as hell. Unless they're on a plate. Okay, so shower parts of Arkansas for us. Clear skies. Oh, in the 60s up north, in 77. I gotta get through this. Temperatures, 80s in the southern part of the state tomorrow. This may be a chance for a chance. Here's a forecast. Just kind of check it out as we go. Partly cloudy, 65 at 8 o'clock in the morning. There may be a shower around.
A Russian peasant gave birth naturally to
No
drugs at all. 16 sets of twins, 7 sets of triplets,
wow.
And 4 sets of quadruplets.
Hey,
how is that even possible? It's crazy.
Well, we've already explained the cow chip to you this morning, so I don't want to explain anything
that's
more.
That's true, we'll that's
just
true.
Leave it at that.
She's got quite the uterus, we'll just say that much.
Satellite radar shot this morning. You're just saying, I know you I can't believe you said that. Alright, satellite radar. Clear skies. 73. That's what her husband said to you. This is 92, such a hot human. We got to get serious because we got the news to do. Back to Natalie?
Woody Woodpecker serenade. On the Woodpecker hit parade. Though we can't sing a note, there's a frog in his throat. All his top notes come out blurred. He's a lady's first choice with a laugh in his voice. He gives all his rivals a bird. He'll be settling down someday. He'll be hearing the preacher say, for the rest of your life, you'll be Woody and wife, and the choir will sing along with the Woody Woodpecker song.
A model fell down twice. That's her going down once. The young woman wearing that pink skirt and the orange platform shoes never quite recovered after that. There she goes. That had to hurt. That was uncool. That's embarrassing. This is at least the second time.
Well, you all are just really tickled by that, aren't you? You try walking in those shoes.
Hey, first of all, baby, I got enough meat on me that it's all right.
George.
I'm sorry.
Come on, Dad.
We want to apologize.
Hold on.
You want me to be
you dog. Oh, he lives to do that to me. Now, see, y'all going to send your letters of complaint to me. He started, not me. He made me
My bad.
You're bad.
Woodpecker pecking out a pie. I see your pecker, but you don't see mine. Here we go.
Oh! Sounds like suicide.
He just would not shut the fuck up. You know that would happen. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
I was just like,
say the right things at the wrong time. Get hit with more than the raw rhymes. Logo and fist the cuffs just like diggy 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 dang dang dang. Say the wrong things at the right time. Get stabbed with the pen that I write rhymes. Me and Logo and fist the cuffs just like diggy diggy dang diggy diggy dang dang.
How much wood would a woodchuck chucker if a woodchuck could chuck wood my knuckle? Or how much bullish woodchuck put up with before he say I wish a motherfucker would just say the wrong things at the right time. I'ma reach your palm, dog. This one's your lifeline. Ain't much left, so not much to tell, bub. Your lips and your eyes can bust and swell up. I'm also getting you the ice in your noggin with frozen peas and something about how that's what you get for not being the man that you were supposed to be. But I can't be sure though, these visions are not perfect. And don't get mad at beige, really it's not worth it. One of them days just did what he had to do. Wasn't getting home without whipping the ass or two.
Say the right things at the wrong time. Get hit with more than the raw rhymes. Me and Logo and fist the cuffs just like diggy 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 dang dang dang. Say the wrong things at the right time. Get stabbed with the pen that I write rhymes. Me and Logo and fist the cuffs just like diggy diggy dang diggy diggy dang dang.
Now, say the right shit at the wrong time. Circumstances flourish, an abstract cross line. Funny cortex stuck up your behind with a sun dome. I see the dumb smoke, I ain't blind. A woodchuck could chuck me from a tree limb. When I got off the ground, dog, you wouldn't want to be him. Believe I'd see him, confront and greet him. Hands around his neck, grab, smother his breathing. I'm not just speaking hypothetically and sound. I'm speaking from a place where we gag and bound. Suffocate and drown, all types of foolish. But really, I'm trying laid back cool. They saying music
stay calm to savage beasts. Except a savage in my speech doesn't come with a smile. Nope. Evidently, we're not here to befriend your side. I ain't your name, guy, it's a bro, neither friend nor pal.
So let me bust the grill on my muscle.
Be a hero, cause anyone can get cracked low past the beer, bro.
Oh, I hear yo, but I'm drinking Smirnoff. Have a couple shots with your boy up the rock.
Aye, if you say so, what I drink, I care not. Let's grab the coats, call the team, hit the Claremont.
Kid, you know I'm with it if you're taking it there. But first, let me roll this up and put this high in the air.
Yeah, say alright, at the wrong time. Get hit with more than the raw rhyme. Logo and fist to cuff just like Diggy 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 Dang Dang Dang. Say the wrong ish at the right time. Get stabbed with the pen that I write rhymes. Me and Logo and fist to cuff just like Diggy Diggy Dang Diggy Diggy Dang Dang.
A 100 years ago, the lions and tigers were kings of the jungle, and then they wound up in zoos. I predict the same will happen to us. Internet pioneer Josh Harris told me this from deep inside a bunker in Manhattan at the turn of the millennium. He meant that we would herd ourselves into our own virtual boxes, our phones and computers, and only realize once we'd been enslaved. And he was right. Most of us in this room can't go but an hour without checking for messages and updates. Our every move is recorded and tracked. We're never offline. We're overwhelmed by our email, but concerned if the load lightens. Our self-worth rises and falls with the numbers of likes and comments we receive. In fact, research has shown that our brains release a hit of dopamine every time we post something personal about ourselves and receive attention from our social networks in return. Josh Harris made millions in the 90s forecasting internet trends, and he even started the first internet television network long before there was broadband. He was determined to spend his money to create a live-in social experiment that would give us all a vision of our future online. He predicted that we would trade our privacy and eventually our freedom for the recognition and connection we so dearly crave. His miniature society had 150 living pods, an 80-foot-long dining room table, and a gun range. There were over 110 surveillance cameras in the space. And everybody had their own screen to watch each other. He told them, "Everything's free except your image. That we own." Yet hundreds lined up for a spot, answering 500 questions about the most personal aspects of their lives, donning uniforms, subjecting themselves to interrogations. They lived in public for weeks until the SWAT team shut it down, perceiving it to be a millennial cult on New Year's Day 2000. But Josh had proved his point. With the internet, we'll each want our 15 minutes of fame every day. And he withstood ridicule for this vision, especially when he showed up in the bunker dressed as his alter ego, Lovey the Clown, who symbolized his consumption of electronic calories from overdosing on TV and media all of his life. 10 years later, as Facebook soared in popularity and we were posting what we had for breakfast online, it became clear that the bunker had come true. We've always been interested in watching each other. From painting on cave walls to peeking over our neighbor's fence, we're fascinated by each other. We want our lives to matter, and we're desperately uncomfortable with the notion that it might all be meaningless. So we seek to be remembered long before we're gone. We Live in Public is really a warning shot across the bow of the future, and it's a horror film starring all of us, scarier now that it's come true than when it was mere prophecy but 5 years ago. But there's an alternative to this kind of self-destructive creativity, and for the first time ever, almost all of us have access to it. We each have moments when we see something that could be done better or differently, and we either go out there and step out of line and pursue that, or more likely, we consider the consequences and stay the course. Meanwhile, we post a pretty picture with a preset filter and enjoy praise from the web. But this might be a distraction, a temporary feeling of importance that needs to be constantly maintained and only delays us from making our real contribution. For me, the camera's been a bridge into worlds I could never otherwise enter. From prisons to army barracks, from mad rock and roll escapades to climatology labs and even deep inside a cult. It's given me permission to enter and ask questions. And with a camera in my hand, I find people answer them. Renoir says, every director makes the same film again and again. And when I first heard that, I thought, gosh, how boring. Hope I don't do that. And then now looking back, I realize actually I kind of do, and most of us do. We track some kind of human aspect of human behavior across all of our work. For me, that's meant looking at what people will give up to have their lives matter. But at the center of every world I explore, there's always someone who can't help but do what they do, and they do it against all odds. Their lives inherently matter because they envision something greater than themselves, which they're determined to make real. I call these people impossible visionaries because they've all been told that what they're trying to do is impossible, and they frustrate the people around them with their impossible behavior as they plow forward anyway. 10 years after I stood in that bunker, it was clear that the same technology that allowed us to expose every corner of our lives and create self-serving avatars online was also removing all financial, geographic, and cultural boundaries. It was allowing us to solve real problems faster and more efficiently than ever before. So I thought, if we could track this impossible gene across my subjects, maybe we could cultivate these trailblazing traits in ourselves to seize upon this special moment in time. All of my subjects can be loved or loathed, depending on the part of the film you're watching, but you can't help but respect their courage and determination. They may be called geniuses or insane or both, but they all share a commitment to realizing their vision no matter what consequences they might suffer, and suffer they do. Not one of them has come out unscathed because they're trying to do something that's never been done before, or they're breaking the rules of how it's done. So no matter how many fans they have, they can't help but remain outsiders. Josh Harris was right when he pictured our vision online, but he lost everything for it. His girlfriend, his money, and even his sanity for a while. Yet he stands by his choices with no regrets, maintaining that every step of the journey informs what he's about to do next. Amanda Palmer had a record-breaking Kickstarter by using the unprecedented power in her pocket, that computing power, and a vast social network to innovate an economy of art making that was brand new, with rewards like house parties that went all night and painting sessions, yet all the while she was lambasted continuously because she operates outside the system and threatens the power structure and those who stand to benefit from it. She tells me, I get a lot of hate. Sometimes it gets to be too much and I collapse. I cry and I shake my fist at God. But then I get up again and do something productive. Anton Newcomb, the lead singer of the Brian Jonestown Massacre and the star of my film Dig, defied the system from how he wrote his songs to how he put them out. When I met him, he was facing an industry showcase and a record deal, which he ultimately destroyed. I am the letter writer and they are the postman, he told me. He prided himself from operating outside the system, recording record after record for less than a price of a case of beer, and then put those songs online before anybody thought of it. Anton was uncomfortable with being comfortable. He needed to ride that line between genius and madness to record the vast and respected catalog of music he's known for today. Bjorn Lundberg is an economist. Yes, that's right, economist. He realized we're not doing anything about climate change, partially because we're paralyzed by a feeling of fear and futility, but also because of a political logjam that's left a single solution so economically unfavorable, no one will pass it. So for 25 years, we leave conferences around the world with no agreement while facing a future for our children that grows hotter by the minute. Lundberg, while I was filming him, was called names, had a pie thrown in his face, and was kicked out of offices because he refuses to surrender to adversity. He stands by and fights for what he believes, that utilizing technology And testing less expensive, experimental, yet logical solutions is the only way to fight climate change. While filming Cool It, we were equally inspired by his cohorts, other impossible visionaries like Stephen Salter, who invented wave energy and also developed a way for us to shoot salt at the clouds to brighten them and reduce the temperatures, and Jonathan Trent, who grows algae underneath the water that traps the carbon down there, while creating food and fuel. For 3 years since, my team has amassed the stories of some of the greatest thought leaders and doers in the world today, from the perspective of their passionate beginnings on, so we might recognize ourselves in the narrative. All of these people see a problem and they try to solve it. We've documented hundreds of them, and we're not done yet. In fact, yesterday in the lobby, I was interviewing Larry Lessig, who you're about to see. Total Disruption is an ongoing empowerment network, and we share our stories as we go. As Mike mentioned, it's a constantly releasing documentary, which in and of itself is disruptively forging a new model for documentary filmmaking. Haven't we all driven by a building, an abandoned building, and imagined what it could be? Maybe we picture a school or a restaurant or a dance studio. And then the light changes and we drive on. We think to ourselves, how could I ever do that? That's impossible. What is it that stops us from stepping out of line to go after these fleeting thoughts that we never pursue? We were all impossible as kindergartners, drawing on the walls or outside the lines, until ultimately we understood, whether taught or ridiculed, that we needed to draw inside those lines. And when we did, we were rewarded for it. How can we entertain these impossible thoughts and give them a seat at the table? It's the people that step out of line and risk doubt and ridicule who bring the most interesting things into our lives. They see opportunity where others see impossibility. They risk the doubt and the ridicule. How can we do this? They trump the fear that scares and seizes so many of us when facing change. And they do as Amanda Palmer advises. They embrace the flux. I can stand here today and urge you to go and pursue that idea or that vision, because of this sweeping change, we have an unprecedented opportunity with the greatest access to collaborators and information across space and time. The lowest cost ever to starting our own business, selling our own art, or helping people who may need our support. Graphic artist Shepard Ferry told me, selling my art directly to my fans means that there's more to go towards the cause itself. He's built a thriving business online, which allows him the freedom to support other artists and charities. And his work shows in prestigious galleries and museums around the world, but that doesn't stop him from hitting the streets to make public art, which has landed him arrested 16 times to date. With a Total Disruption, we document chief executive artists like Shepard Ferry and also the invisible superheroes that are inventing our future. People like Bram Cohen, the founder of BitTorrent, Tony Hsieh, the CEO of Zappos, who's taking $350 million of his personal funds and his deep knowledge of the importance of company culture to revitalize downtown Las Vegas. Or Dean Kamen, who invented the portable dialysis machine and a water purifying system that requires no electricity, which is saving thousands of lives in Africa. These people have the courage to take the first step and the tenacity to follow through, even after failure, and they all fail. And fail until they succeed. We document them in the hopes that we may be inspired to grow smarter, faster together, and nurture each other into living more fulfilling, more independent lives. I was recently interviewing a San Quentin inmate, that's a prison in California, for a Total Disruption. He's part of a tech incubator called The Last Mile. He's learning how to start his own business, but he's never touched a computer because he's in prison. I asked him what he thinks the internet might look like. He said it's a place your dream can live, and you have the power and access to connect with anyone, anywhere in the world, to make something of what's going on inside your mind. So think through those dreams you've put away for another day and get with a friend or go online. Someone somewhere probably has the same impossible idea you do. And now you can connect with them across all geographic boundaries. And you can test your idea almost immediately instead of using that same feedback loop to bask in your 15 minutes of fame. My latest documentary that I'm making now is about Russell Brand, who realized that fame and this money, sex, and drugs that came along with it didn't make for a fulfilling life. His new mission is to wake us up, to realize we've been led to pursue these things so that we can be controlled and exploited by the powers that have, well, the interests that have the power. I heard him call himself crazy the other day, and it sounded like he was saying it in a positive way, so I asked him to define insanity for me. He said it's listening to the voice inside your head over the voices outside of it. He advises, if you want to get anywhere in your life, you got to learn to disobey the people that are telling you what to do right now. The impossible part of an impossible visionary means that they can be frustrating and difficult. They will be. But it also means they're tackling something that seems impossible to pull off, and they might just need to have a little bit of impossible in them in order to hang in there, despite the financial and emotional struggle, despite the prevailing wisdom and logic and reason and the hemming and hawing of everyone around them. All of these visionaries seem driven by a confidence and a tenacity that's fed by an endless flow of serendipity, like they're in touch with or in sync with something that's greater than themselves. I've learned that serendipity breeds serendipity. That blessed good fortune or that aha moment, it can be obtained and it can be grown. But in order to experience increased serendipity, we need to recognize it. All of these disruptors, these crazy people, they make plans. But then when they realize that something they're doing in the now is more important or that they need to change direction, they're willing to break those plans. If we listen to our inner voice, it will grow stronger. Our lives will blossom, and as our ideas take physical shape, the world around us will blossom too. It's predicted that 40% of our jobs will be obsolete in the next 20 years, or we will be replaced by robots, or the jobs will change so significantly they'll require an entirely new set of skills. This is really scary, but it's also really exciting because most of us weren't working on our dreams all day anyhow. Will technology destroy us or save us? It can go either way, towards the dark vision of we live in public, or towards the passion-driven democratization and actualization of a total disruption. Will we be trapped by our virtual boxes or freed by them? It's a little bit of both right now, but what is for sure is that the power we have in our pocket is greater than all the world's computers just 5 years ago. So this is our chance, this is our opportunity to step out of line and be impossible together, to make something truly massive and meaningful with our lives. Let's not pass it up. One disruptive entrepreneur on the ATD platform said it best. If someone says your idea is crazy, it's probably worth doing.
Very powerful stuff. What more do you want?
Sunset lightning in my bones. Push me to the edge, but my will is strong. 'Cause I believe in a better way. Now, gofindtheothers.com.
Well, that was conceptually adventurous.